At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
They are Sports Illustrated.
It's amazing.
This incredible body of work.
I really appreciate the integrity.
Everything you do is well done.
You guys do a great job.
We love it. What can we say?
He's Chris Mannix.
He's employed by Sports Illustrated.
The announcer's got it in for me.
There you go.
This is the Sports Illustrated NBA Podcast.
You have a problem with it? Build a team that can beat them.
Hosted by the one and only.
Oh, thank God.
Thank God.
Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the Crossover NBA Podcast. Glad you could join me. A lot to talk about this week in the NBA. You had the Bulls' decision to fire Fred Hoiberg, the Utah Jazz still struggling, Kemba Walker as an MVP candidate, and much more. For all that, I bring back Rohan Nadkarni, my colleague over at Sports Illustrated. We dive into all that stuff and much more of the goings-on in the NBA. A little bit later on, Trae Young, the dynamic rookie out of Oklahoma. He's about a quarter of the way through his rookie season. I had a chance to sit down with him for a few minutes in Atlanta this past week, and we got into really the adjustment to the NBA, the comparisons to Luka Doncic, all that and more with Trae Young. Quick housekeeping note, if you like this podcast, very easy way you can support it. Head over to Apple Podcast, also known as iTunes, post a comment, leave a rating. It's simple, it's easy, it's free. It's the best way to make sure that we keep doing this podcast week after week. That's it. All right, on to my conversation with Rohan Nadkarni. All right, back on the podcast this week for the second week in a row. Just keep coming back for more. Rohan Nadkarni from Sports Illustrated and SI.com. What's up, Rohan?
I'm great, Chris. How are you?
So you were at the Big Ten championship game this weekend. Is that what I'm hearing from you?
That's correct. I had to support my Northwestern Wildcats. Tough game, but
Tough beat in that one.
Listen, that the people will forget years from now, but that third quarter, I saw the look of fear in the fans of Ohio State. They were so nervous, and that moment alone was worth the trip to Indianapolis.
No, I think they were just drunk, and that's less nervous. Don't worry. I feel your pain as someone that will be getting his first responder bowl T-shirt for when BC lines up against those feisty Boise State whatevers in Dallas in a few weeks. I'll be locked in for that one.
There's literally nothing you could do to be more from Boston than you are.
That's probably true. My accent could come back more.
That's true, yeah.
It disappeared in my 15 years living in New York, but give it time. Give it time and alcohol, and it usually comes back there. All right, lot to get into here, Rohan. And the breaking news as we just started recording this podcast, Fred Hoiberg out in Chicago as the coach of the Bulls. 4+ years on the sidelines for Fred Hoiberg. Not a very impressive record. 115 and 155. He made the playoffs once. They got ousted in the first round back in 2017. So the numbers say Fred Hoiberg is not getting the job done. But as we know in sports, the numbers only tell part of the story. Fred Hoiberg never had a very good team or never had the pieces in Chicago to be successful. He took over a team that was largely Tom Thibodeau's team in 2015, and now he's coaching a team that is in a full-scale rebuild after trading away Jimmy Butler and all the veterans from that roster. So with all that being said, what do you make of the Bulls' decision to fire Fred Hoiberg?
I mean, listen, I think Fred Hoiberg got a bad deal in Chicago. I don't think that he's also necessarily the guy for their future. I think he's a perfectly fine coach. I think they can find someone as good as, if not better than him, to lead this rebuild. But when you look back at his tenure with the Bulls, I mean, the Jimmy Butler thing, they never got along. In retrospect, you can kind of put that a little bit more on Jimmy now after you saw how things played out in Minnesota. They brought Dwayne Wade and Rajon Rondo in after, you know, it looked like they might finally be ready for a rebuild. I just think that Hoiberg he never got to coach a Fred Hoiberg team in Chicago. They were always trying to, you know, patch up the holes and put together a run, and they never seem to have a long-term plan in place. And now, finally, when it looks like they're committed to rebuilding the team, they fire him. It just doesn't make sense to me. The management there, I think, leaves a lot to be desired, frankly. I'm not really a huge fan of the moves they've made recently. The Jabari Parker signing, I think, was kind of nonsensical. Now the Hoiberg firing, It just seems like they don't have a plan. I don't really understand what they're going for. It's not like it's a surprise to anyone that they're losing games right now.
No, they're actually designed right now to lose games. They've stripped this team of every significant part. They've been dealing with injuries over the early part of the season. They're doing what they want Fred Hoiberg to be doing. They're 5-19 to start the season, and that's exactly where they want to be. They want to be in a position to get a high draft pick to pair alongside, you know, Zach LaVine and some of the other younger pieces. They're just getting Lauri Markkanen back, who was one of the bigger surprises of last year's draft class. I mean, he was compared favorably to Dirk Nowitzki. He's not Dirk, but he's a pretty good player. So I don't really understand how this is Fred Hoiberg's fault. As you said, they've never put together the type of team that he was built to coach. If you watch Fred Hoiberg coach at Iowa State, he's an up-tempo type of coach who needs guys that are athletic. That was not the team he took over. The team he took over was a Tom Thibodeau team that was used to kind of slugging out games and trying to get wins in a physical, grind-it-out type of way. I don't know if he's a great coach. He's probably going to go back to the college ranks right now. But to take this a little bit further, is this not a John Paxson, Gar Forman problem here? I mean, John Paxson and Gar Forman have been in their respective positions in that front office since 2009. Since that point, they've done nothing. They've accomplished nothing. They've been to, what, one conference finals? That was back in 2011 when Derrick Rose was the MVP. They battled with Tom Thibodeau. They brought in Fred Hoiberg. At some point, and we had this conversation last week about the Wizards front office, at some point, you have to look upstairs and say that's where the problems are.
Yeah, I'm really just about to go off on the Bulls. First of all, Derrick Rose, fraudulent MVP. Just want to throw that out there. He should have won that award. Okay. Second of all, I'm with you completely. I mean, the Bulls are like a marquee franchise because they had the good fortune of like drafting Michael Jordan. But like, you take those 6 years out, like, what are they? Like, what have they been doing since like 2000? Like, you know what I mean? Like, we can keep going back in terms of like how long the Bulls have kind of been irrelevant, frankly. And like, you know, Paxson and Forman, I agree, it's no plan. Like, they're always trying to just do these short-term fixes, and I'm so over it. Like, I'm tired of caring about this team. Like, I don't know why we don't view them the way we view the Kings or the Suns at this point. It's like, I don't know what they're skating on, but they're just bad. They're bad, and I don't know who's going to sign there. I don't know who wants to sign there. You never hear their name comes up now, like, anymore in free agency stuff. They're boring. They're bad. I mean, I don't know what the future path for them is, but I'm not excited about it. I think Markkanen's a good player. LaVine can score, but will he ever play defense well enough for it to matter? And the Hoiberg thing is just the latest. They just like throwing their hands up, you know, like, all right, we'll try this now. And it never seems to work. And I don't know if I have faith in the front office to find players or a coach, even frankly, that'll be a good fit for these guys moving forward. So I'm with you. Like, their front office can go as well. They just don't even seem to care enough to frankly try anything new there.
Yeah, they've done a decent job at drafting over the years. I think Wendell Carter is going to be able to play. We saw Lauri Markkanen last year. He's a player. I agree with you. Zach LaVine still has a lot to prove before you consider him a franchise player. Free agency, I like the Jabari Parker deal because it's very low risk, basically a one-year deal with that second year in the non-guarantee. The Butler thing, the way it's imploded in Minnesota, it seemed like that was the right thing to do at the time, even though you didn't get dollar-for-dollar value back for Jimmy Butler. But if you're going to hold Fred Hoiberg accountable for the failures of this team over the last 4 or 5 years, you have to hold the front office accountable. To your point of what they were, the sort of nonsensical approach they had to building a team, you know, a couple of years ago when they made the playoffs, they put together a team of really young players they were trying to build around, and then they brought in like these Band-Aids, the Rondos and the Wades to try to make the playoffs while they were building a young team. That almost never works. I mean, I think the Houston Rockets over the years are like the only example I can think of a team that's transitioned between two eras and has been able to play good basketball, 500 level basketball in between. Everybody out there wants to try to do it, try to rebuild and still be competitive. But you, more often than not, you have to choose between one or the other. And, you know, this example of what the Bulls were doing is just another example of how it doesn't work to try to rebuild with veterans on the roster.
Yeah, I'm I'm just ready for them to tank and find.
They are tanking. I mean, they're one of the worst teams in basketball. They're tankerific. And Jim Boylan, I mean, you know, again, we're getting this information in real time from what we understand. Jim Boylan is not the interim coach. He's going to be the coach for the foreseeable future.
Okay.
Is he the guy? Like,
no, he's not. Let me just
is he just the guy to bring in to help tank for a couple of years? I mean, I don't know what the thinking is with Jim Boylan, who is, I don't know what his age is, but he's on the older side. I don't know what if that's the right call long term.
It's not. I can say that confidently now. It's not. I mean, what, the team could be good in like 3 years, maybe, and then Jim Boylan's going to, I mean, no, it's not the right long term call.
No, doesn't make any sense. All right, so the Bulls stink, and they're dysfunctional too, so moving on from Fred Hoiberg. Good luck. Fred's going to get a lot of offers, by the way, in the college ranks. He was a good coach.
He is. Yeah, I think he's a good coach. I still think he can make it work in the NBA one day. He just needs a front office that's supporting him with the right players.
Yeah, I don't think, I'm with you. I don't think we really know what kind of NBA coach that Fred Hoiberg really is because of everything that we saw the last 4 years in Chicago. I mean, he was considered a rising star in the coaching ranks when he was at Iowa State. For context, if the Bulls didn't pluck him out of Iowa State, somebody else would have. Fred Hoiberg left the Minnesota Timberwolves as a rising executive in those ranks. So he is well-respected at whatever he does. So it's hard for me to believe that he can't be a successful NBA coach. I'm with you. I think he needs to just have people around him that support him and a system and players that make sense for the organization that he's coaching. All right, let's move on to something equally as downtrodden. The Utah Jazz, they blew a 19-point lead in Miami on Sunday, Rohan, lost to the Heat. Utah's now 11-13 as we speak on the season, and they've got a pretty tough schedule over the next couple of weeks. Two games against San Antonio. They've got Houston on the docket. They've got Oklahoma City. Give me your kind of 10,000-foot overview of the Utah Jazz. Under 500 after being widely considered, including by me, to be in the running for the number two team in the Western Conference.
Well, first of all, you should have listened to me and realized that the Nuggets were actually the team on the rise in the West, not the Utah Jazz. We can talk about that later. Okay. Here's what I'd say. Two things come to mind when I think about the Jazz. Number one, the way the league has changed seemingly so much just from last year to this year, that puts an extra pressure on teams that are defense first. You're seeing it with a couple teams around the league. I mean, you can even throw Miami in that example, where if you don't have elite offensive talent or an offensive system that makes your offense elite, for lack of a better word, I mean, you're going to struggle. And I think that's what's happening to the Jazz right now. I mean, this is a team that's built on its defensive identity first and foremost. And the way the game has gone so far, at least for the first quarter plus of this season, it's rewarding offenses more so than defenses. So that worries me about them a little bit. Secondly, there's just a lot of pressure on Donovan Mitchell right now. He hasn't been really efficient for large stretches of this season. Teams are keying in on him now way more than they were last year. I think what they need, and I'm sure we'll get into, you know, obviously they just made a trade recently. What worries me about them is they kind of just don't have that second guy who can go get you a bucket. I mean, who else do you really trust on that team other than Donovan Mitchell to run a pick and roll and get to the rim and finish or something like that? I just don't know if they have that second guy, that bench scorer, someone to just kind of alleviate the pressure on Mitchell, whether it's ball handling, scoring, whatever. So those are the two things I'm looking at right now. One, can you still be as successful as they were as the second half of last season if defense is your identity? And B, you know, how badly do they need to get in a second guy with Mitchell? I remember thinking over the summer, you know, this was before the Kawhi trade and stuff like that, and, you know, the Raptors, there were obviously rumors that they were going to blow it up. I was like, they should try to go get someone like Kyle Lowry. They need, like, another scorer, another person who can create, and I think those are their two biggest problems right now.
Yeah, offensively, and this goes back to when the Celtics played their game against Utah, in Utah, Gordon Hayward's return. I was asking people in Utah, like, you know, is it going to be that nasty a reception? Are you still pissed because you do have Donovan Mitchell here, and Donovan Mitchell has become your Gordon Hayward? And the responses I got were, yeah, but you know how good we'd be if we had Gordon Hayward, another offensive weapon, a go-to guy to pair with Donovan Mitchell? So, yeah, they need that second guy, and there's nobody on the roster that really fits that bill. You know, there are guys, Joe Ingles can make shots, Jay Crowder can make shots, Ricky Rubio is a playmaker, I don't really know what Dante Exum is, but there's nobody on that roster you look at and say, all right, over time, that player can develop into an alpha. All that being said, this is what they had last year, too, and they were still a really good team that pushed their way into the second round. I can't understand why the defense has completely, you know, bottomed out and fallen apart this year. I mean, some of the numbers are staggering. The points in the paint, specifically, Rohan, what they're giving up, right around 50 points per game. The numbers, you know, upwards of or close to 60% that teams are shooting against Rudy Gobert when they take the ball in the paint in near the rim. It's startling. Rudy Gobert shouldn't have forgotten how to play defense over the course of half a season. Now, maybe teams are adjusting, and the Jazz oftentimes do play bigger than most teams when they have Gobert and Favors in that starting lineup. But the fact they've fallen to a middle-of-the-pack defensive team is really astonishing, given that there haven't been really any substantive changes to that roster.
Yeah, I agree. That is the slide there is almost hard to comprehend. It is hard to comprehend, not almost. I mean, I'm with the Gobert stuff is interesting. Their offense also often looks sluggish with him on the court. He's such an important part of that team. I mean, what's crazy is Gobert was kind of the reason they went on that huge run last year, if you remember.
Yeah.
They were in, you know, similar position last year. They weren't very good, you know, right around 500, whatever. Gobert comes back healthy and they rip off a huge run. I don't know if there's a health issue or some kind of concern there that hasn't been made fully public yet, but I hate putting it all on one guy, which is what often happens in situations like these, but it is crazy to think, comparing his numbers to last year, how much slippage there's been. And on one hand, you could spin that and say, that gives you hope. Hey, maybe he just needs to find himself. Maybe he needs to get his legs. Something like that, that would lend you to believe they could turn it around. But it's crazy because Gobert was such a huge reason for their success last year that it's shocking how different it's been, you know, not even a whole year later.
Yeah, to your point, I think it was like late season against Atlanta or late January against Atlanta when they lost a game in Atlanta, and that was kind of rock bottom for that team. And a couple of games later, or right around that time, whatever it was, Rudy Gobert came back and they started to win games largely with their defense. And I got to believe that somewhere. But if you watch some of these games, and I've watched a bunch of them, they look just like completely disconnected defensively. They're missing assignments. They're doing stuff that a team that's been together as long as the core of this Jazz team has been together, at least a couple of years now. They're doing stuff that looks like they're a group that was just put together. It's like you expect this type of defense from the Lakers, who are, you know, kind of put together on the fly. Even Boston, which is incorporating new pieces into their puzzle.
Don't try to defend Boston in the middle of this.
Defending. By the way, they're playing pretty good basketball.
Yeah, they're playing bad teams is what's happening. Okay, go ahead.
Well,
okay.
They had a win on Saturday. That was a pretty good win for them. Not bad. Not bad win. A road win at Minnesota.
Okay, we'll get to them later.
On the Jazz, they get Kyle Korver. They give up Alec Burks. I like the deal for both sides. Korver didn't want to be in Cleveland. Wasn't part of their long-term plans. The Cavs get Alec Burks. Who knows what he is? Former lottery pick who's been injured. Maybe they can, you know, resuscitate him as a reasonable player. But Korver going to Utah, you would think, would be a round peg, round hole type of fit, because right now the Jazz are 27th in the NBA in three-point shooting, right around 32.6%. That's something Korver should immediately improve.
Definitely. I like the pickup for them. I don't think he's going to fix their problems overnight. Obviously, the stuff we're talking about, he's not necessarily the solution, but Korver's a great veteran presence, and he gives you a little bit of flexibility. I mean, his defense is maligned, but he gives great effort on that end. I don't think he's going to, you know, ruin their defense overnight or anything like that. They do need shooting, right? If you put Mitchell at point guard in certain lineups, you take Rubio out, Korver can be a great help there. He lets them play smaller in certain situations. So, yeah, I definitely like the pickup for them. It just comes down to how much can he move the needle? Does he what they need right now? Would they still maybe need a handler, creator? It would have been great if they had maybe somehow gotten Tyreek Evans or someone like that over the summer. But I agree that I like the trade for both sides. Korver should definitely help Utah.
Support for the Crossover NBA podcast comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, America's premier purchase lender. Let's talk about buying a home for a minute. It can be one of the most important purchases you'll ever make, but today's fluctuating interest rates can leave you with unexpected higher payments, which can turn a great experience into an anxious one. That's why Quicken Loans created their exclusive power buying process. Here's how it works. They check your income, assets, and credit to give you a verified approval. This gives you the strength of a cash buyer, making your offer more attractive to sellers. Once verified, you qualify for their exclusive Rate Shield approval. They'll lock your interest rate up for 90 days while you shop for a new home. Then, once you've found the one, if rates have gone up, your rate stays the same. But if rates have gone down, you get to keep that new lower rate. Either way, you win. It's the kind of thinking you'd expect from America's largest mortgage lender. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/Mannix. That's rocketmortgage.com/MANNIX. Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. All right, so moving on to Charlotte, where the Hornets have themselves a legitimate MVP candidate. Kemba Walker is averaging like 27 points a game. He's attempting more than 9 threes per game, making 36% of them so far this season. Meanwhile, the Hornets are the number 7 offense in the NBA. They were 13th in the league last season. James Borrego done a pretty good job of harnessing Kemba Walker, and Kemba, of course, has really improved his game. Let me ask you first, do you consider Kemba Walker in this league a top 5 point guard?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm trying to think now who would be in my top 5. And I think you got to have Lowry ahead of him still, Kyrie, Steph. Who are the other great point guards?
Well, look, I think at a minimum, Kemba Walker should be in the running for the second best point guard in the Eastern Conference. I think Kyrie's number one still. You mentioned Lowry, but I think Kemba this season is right there with Kyle Lowry.
Well, I think
maybe better.
I think this season Kemba is playing like a top 5 player in the league at this point. I mean, like right now in this exact moment, he's playing out of his mind and he's putting his stamp on the season just as much as any other superstar, frankly. I mean, he's just been unstoppable. There are nights where you watch him and you just don't, I just can't think of a defensive strategy within certain games that's going to work right now when he's running a pick and roll. I mean, it's really incredible.
Yeah, and he's pulling up from everywhere, and he's become a threat from every spot on the floor beyond the three-point line. He's really fun to watch, but I bring him up because, look, the Hornets are what they are. They're, you know, a playoff team, probably, in the Eastern Conference. Do they advance past the first round? Probably not in that conference. And then at the end of the season, they've got themselves a pretty big decision to make on Kemba Walker. Kemba Walker's going to be 29 years old when he's up for a new contract this summer. And he could be eligible if he makes, you know, the All-NBA team or one of the other benchmarks that lead to this. He could be eligible for that Supermax contract, which pays you 35% of your team's salary cap. That's north of $200 million over a 5-year deal. How tough, Rohan, is that going to be a decision for the Hornets to make at the end of the season?
That's a great question because this combines two of maybe my like biggest pet issues in the NBA right now. Number one, the Supermax is terrible. It hasn't really worked out the way it should. It either cripples teams or it forces someone like Anthony Davis to choose between theoretically playing for a contender or making the money he deserves to make. I really don't like the Supermax. I don't like what it's done to the league. I think it's bad for teams and it's bad for players as well. I don't think players should be able to make as much money as they want anywhere. It shouldn't just have to be for the team that drafted them or whatever. And then beyond that, Charlotte is one of those teams where I think you have to change the definition of success. If you're Charlotte, I don't think that you're not going to be, frankly, a free agent destination. It's going to be hard for you to build title contenders. And when you have someone like Kemba Walker, I'm not comfortable letting him walk, even if that means you have to tie your team to him, even if it means the last year or two of the contract don't look great, even if that means your ceiling is a second-round exit. I think that's a successful season if you're the Charlotte Hornets, and you don't just give up on a guy like Kemba Walker, especially as he's blossoming, making another, you know, small leap into superstar, and whatever you want to call this. Maybe you don't think it's sustainable, but it's an extremely tough decision. I don't envy the Hornets, but if it were me, and maybe it's because, as you know, Chris, I'm an emotional guy, I'm a sensitive guy, but I'm keeping Kemba because I just don't think that you let franchise players like that walk. And I think if you're the Hornets and you're, you know, pushing to make the second round every year and you have a great player like him, you can consider that successful.
Well, I mean, that's a dangerous place to go if, you know, the second round becomes a reason to have a parade or something.
I'm not saying that.
I mean, you call it successful. I mean, that's...
I do think it's successful. I'm tired of championship or bust. I know that you're one of these, you know, rah-rah Boston guys, and you're like,
Boston guy. I don't want to give, participation trophies out either. I mean, I'm just saying, I think you need to have higher goals than the second round. Look, Kemba Walker is more than just a player for the Charlotte Hornets. He is going to go down as, even if he leaves at the end of the season, one of the great Hornets of all time. He will be on their, I'm trying to think of what their Mount Rushmore would look like, because Franch has only been around for 30 years and it moved.
Larry Johnson, maybe?
I mean, Larry Johnson, Lonzo Mourning. But he'll be up there with the great all-time Charlotte Hornets. And if you read, like Zach Lowe did a great piece on Walker this past week, and it just describes the impact he has on that community and exactly what it would mean if he wound up leaving that franchise at some point. All that being said, a guy like Kemba Walker, I'm not sure his game ages all that well. Hmm. You know, when you're about 6 feet, 6 foot one, and you're a year or so away from hitting 30, I don't know if you're going to be, I don't know what kind of regression there's going to be on your game. That would worry me about paying Kemba Walker like John Wall money into into his mid 30s. And I bring up John Wall because when you start tying players like a Kemba Walker to those types of contracts, you get the Washington Wizards and you get a team that is pretty good, but as you said, has what you described as success, have a second round ceiling, which is what the Wizards kind of have right now. I don't know if you want to do that if you're Charlotte, because you may look to trade him down the line. Here's what I would do if I was the Hornets. I would be having a conversation with Kemba Walker's representatives right now, and I would tell them, like, look, we're willing to give him a 5-year max level contract. We're not willing to give him the 5-year supermax, no matter what happens at the end of the year. So if you want 5 years, like $160 million, that's a place we're willing to go. If you're saying to us, we're holding out for 5 years, $200+ million, that 35% cap number, you got to wash your hands of it. And you'd also want to get an answer now before the February trade deadline, so maybe you can get something back in return. It's a tough call because of what Kemba Walker means, but these are the type of tough calls that if you're a GM, if you're Mitch Kupchak, you are paid to make these decisions.
Listen, I don't know if you've been reading too much Art of the Deal or something like that, but I disagree. Yeah. I don't think they should play hardball with Kemba. I really don't. You have a rare situation where you have a superstar type player who wants to be in your city. Like, he's not like Kevin Durant saying, ask me after the season. He's not one of those guys. He said, I want to be in Charlotte. How many guys of his caliber have said that over the last 30 years, over the franchise existence? We talk about their Mount Rushmore. Like, Alonzo Mourning left. Like, he's not going to be remembered as a Charlotte Hornet. Kemba Walker wants that. And I just think that you talk about his game aging. I will say what separates him from, he can shoot. That's going to help his game age at the very least. Maybe not at a superstar level, but I think he can play into the future for quite a few years. You maybe try to find a way to bring in another guy around him. I think Borrego is a really good coach who can make it work. When you see some of these other contracts they free up from, when they get rid of, Batum in a couple years, guys like that, I think they can kind of reload and make a better team around Kemba. And I that would be my strategy if I'm the Hornets. I'm going to bring back the superstar level player who wants to stay, who wants to play in my city, who wants to be committed, and then figure it out from there.
So if it's full max, $220 million, you'd be okay with that?
I think so. I mean, I do. To me, it's better than the alternative. Obviously, a lot of teams kind of bet on that, the cap continuing to raise to help them out. So you wouldn't want
to. That doesn't work. Like, I mean, it didn't.
I agree. I'm not saying you should count on that, but that maybe works in their favor one day as well. And they're going to get out from a lot of other bad contracts. It's not like the Wizards, who are paying your favorite player Otto Porter like $25 million also. I mean, in a couple years, they can kind of reset, have one big contract, and then find a way to build a proper team around that.
Yeah, a couple years. I mean, it's 2.5 years with Nick Batum, whose contract isn't up till 2021. You've got the immortal Bismack Biyombo with $17 million coming his way in a player option next season. He's picking that bad boy up. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, I would imagine, would pick his contract up at $13 million Plus Cody Zeller. There are some bad contracts.
Cody Zeller is not bad. I also want to shout out Bismack Biyombo, who does a lot of incredible humanitarian work.
Yes, we read. That's great. And good for. And I'm so happy that he's doing stuff for his country, for people. As a basketball player, his contract is a cap killer on that team.
Agreed.
Team's roster. All right, let me move on to the Memphis Grizzlies, who are another surprise team, this time in a positive direction. The Grizzlies, they did lose on Sunday. They have dropped three of the last four in the past week. But after finishing 22-60, Rohan, last season, the Grizz are 13 and I believe 9 or 10 and in the playoff mix. Doing it, by the way, with the old school grit and grind offensive and defensive philosophy. They play at the slowest pace in the NBA and they are a top five defensive team. So what do you think of the new old Memphis Grizzlies?
I love the Memphis Grizzlies, man. I've always loved this team, even when, you know, back in the day, that never looked like they'd be one of the best teams in the West. They were so much fun to watch. The chemistry that Marc Gasol and Mike Conley have is so special. It's the kind of thing that can only be cultivated if you've been together as long as they have and been through the battles that they have been through together. I mean, this is a team that was squaring off with the KD Russ Thunder, like way back in the day, you know, like the Tim Duncan Kawhi Spurs. Like, they've been around the block, man. I love the Grizzlies. I'm really happy for them. Mike Conley is like maybe going to get an MVP vote or two just because someone's going to be like, whatever win improvement they make, you can almost just point to him and say he's the reason why. Jaren Jackson is the truth, man. He's been incredible for them. We talked about it earlier, that the idea that, you know, you can't really mix young and old. They, in a sense, were fortunate that they had these two veterans on their team. One of them was hurt last year. They got in a great tank and they picked up exactly the kind of rookie they need to put around the veterans on their roster. So I'm really happy for them. I'm happy for their fans. I'm excited about them this season. I want to see them in the playoffs. I want to see them try to grind it down to an absolute halt and play their old school style in the playoffs and just see how it goes against some of these great teams. So I'm really excited about their season.
Yeah, you mentioned Mike Conley, and after a little bit of a slow start shooting the ball in October, November was a terrific month. He was about 22 points, shot 36% from three, a little low on the field goal percentage, around 43%, but he has really started to come around coming off what was a pretty significant injury, that kind of heel injury, foot injury, for a player that relies on speed and quickness. It's great to see Mike Conley bounce back, especially a guy that's also a great guy in this league, just a great person in this league. And Jaren Jackson, here's where the Grizzlies finally did something right. The Memphis Grizzlies, for like the last decade, have sucked at drafting. Like, they have not been particularly successful with high or low. I mean, you can go back to like Hasheem Thabeet and who they drafted in, 2009 as these draft picks that they missed on and set them back. I mean, Jordan Adams in 2014, that set them back. Wade Baldwin, what did he last, like a year in Memphis? 17th overall pick, that set them back. Jaren Jackson looks like the real deal. Jaren Jackson looks like a cornerstone piece and a modern NBA type of player that you could put alongside Marc Gasol. So I hate to think it's that simple, but when you hit on draft picks, you have improved teams. When you whiff on draft picks, as the Grizzlies have done time and time again, you don't have good teams. You don't see improvement in your game. So to me, it boils down, it's Mike Conley for sure, because they didn't have him last year and he's a all-star level point guard. But Jaren Jackson being able to play is a huge win for them.
I'll just throw this out there in a mild, mild defense of the Grizzlies' draft history. The Thabeet one...
How do you even go there?
The Thabeet one is a bad pick, but everything else, they've also... It hurts them that they've been successful, okay? They've never had... They don't get a lot of great, you know, shots. You know, you mentioned Wade Baldwin or whatever, Jordan Adams. At that point in the draft, you get a lot of those types of players. That's all I'm saying. Could they be better at drafting? Yes, without a doubt. But the fact that they made the playoffs every year also hurts them when it comes to drafting.
Okay. No.
What do you mean no? That's so true.
One whiff is fine. Like, you whiff once, great. I mean, that's what happens. You're right. When you pick in the back half of the first round, it's a crapshoot. What, four or five guys at most usually turn out to be players, but Wade Baldwin, who couldn't even make it past two seasons with the Memphis Grizzlies, you could have had Caris LeVert, who can clearly play. You could have had Pascal Siakam, who can clearly play. Damian Jones, who before he got injured is looking like a pretty good player with the Golden State Warriors. You want to go back a year? When did they draft Jordan Adams there? Was that 2000? I think it was 14. Who is it? They could have had somebody.
But you could say that about every draft every year. It just seems to
be the Grizzlies over and over again. The pick after Jordan Adams, Rodney Hood, who is having his problems in Cleveland, but looked like a pretty good player. Kyle Anderson, who they now have on the roster, is a pretty good player.
See, it all works out in the end.
Think about what they would have been if they didn't draft Hasheem Thabeet.
That's a fair one. I'll give you Thabeet, but that was a long time ago.
That was 2009. It wasn't that long ago. They could have had James Harden. They could have had Steph Curry. They could have had, just even going further down the list, Drew Holiday.
Don't make me go back.
Jeff Teague.
Don't make me go back into your SI archive and find out that you like did some workout with Hasheem Thabeet in 2009 and hyped him up. Don't let me find it, Chris. That's all I'm going to say.
No, I have no interest in hyping. I never hyped up Hasheem Thabeet. I'm just saying you're paying a lot of money if you're GMs of these teams to not whiff on picks like that. You have James Harden on that team. What are they now?
I get it. All right, we don't need to relitigate Hasheem Thabeet. All I'm saying is a lot of people thought he was a top pick at that time, not just the Memphis Grizzlies. But this is the most anyone has ever needed to talk about Hasheem Thabeet in a NBA podcast in the 21st
century. Look, and this is a roundabout way of praising the Grizzlies. Jaren Jackson was not an obvious pick at number four. Like, there were other guys in that mix, and I remember a lot of people reading about a lot of people that are smarter than I am, critical of that pick, saying that they should have gone a different direction there, but they didn't. They picked Jaren Jackson. Looks like he's going to work out. Now they have a good young piece to build around and maybe transition them down the line from the Gasol and the Mike Conley era. All right, let me finish with Minnesota. Saw the Wolves play against Boston this past weekend. Didn't have a good game there. The defense kind of fell apart, but they have been one of the better NBA defenses since that Jimmy Butler trade. They're in the playoff mix once again. If they continue this pace, they'll probably get into the playoffs. Tom Thibodeau might have saved his job out in Minnesota. What do you make of the post-Jimmy Butler trade Minnesota Timberwolves?
I mean, I'm happy for the players on that team. I do think the Jimmy thing dragged on for way too long and was just holding certain guys in limbo, and it was just frustrating. Here's what I think happened. I think that, first of all, in terms of one of these trades, picking up guys like Covington and Saric, who are incredibly useful players who can fill in a role on just about any team in the league, was a smart move for them, right? Because when you're paying Karl Towns and Andrew Wiggins as much money as you're paying them, you can't really be a rebuilding team. Like, you can't be a tanking team if you have two guys that you believe are budding stars. So you need to put good players around them. So they did that with Covington and Saric, which was a good start. I think guys have settled into their roles there. First of all, they're getting an out-of-his-mind season from Derrick Rose, who's one of the hottest three-point shooters in the league, and you kind of have to look at that a little skeptically just because you have to wonder how long it can last, but that helps. But Towns, I think, has finally settled into his role, right? I don't think he's walking on eggshells anymore. I think he can take more ownership of what's happening there. I think he feels more freedom, and I think that's really good for his development. I'm not saying that Wiggins and Towns would have been better players without Jimmy Butler, but you do wonder how his attitude, his presence on that team kind of affected their development. So I still don't think Wiggins still has a way more to improve. I think Towns has been the better player since the Butler deal, but I think guys are settling down into their roles, and as much as it hurt losing a talent like Jimmy, they did a good job to get in pieces who can help who they have there right now.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know what the other offers were specifically over the month plus where this was a major story in the NBA, but by holding out for the Covington-Saric package, I think it makes them, it certainly makes them a deeper team, and long-term, you can argue it makes them an even stronger team. Covington is signed to one of those team-friendly deals mm-hmm. over the next three-plus seasons, never going to make more than $13 million per year. Saric under control for the next season and a half, and then you can deal with his qualifying offer and signing him to a long-term deal. That was a good deal for them. Their defense has become a Tom Thibodeau-type defense again. Now, the opponents haven't been great during these last 8 or 9 games, but the defense has significantly improved, and Covington has proven himself as a high-level team defender. I think he's still the only player in the NBA to be top 20 in steals, which I think he's still first, and block shots, which is in that 15 to 20 range. So he's playing out of his mind defense this season. Sarek is a floor spacer. You can kick it out to him wherever he is on the wing and open up space for Towns. Towns has been, the numbers bear this out, Towns has been more assertive. His usage rate is up in the aftermath of the Butler deal. And I do think that Derrick Rose, that this is sustainable for him. I had this conversation with Rob McClanahan, his personal trainer, over the weekend. And Rob and I were talking about how, you know, there are the obvious reasons that Derrick Rose is an improved player. He's playing for Thibodeau. He's healthy. He's coming off the bench, which takes a lot of pressure off him in those situations. But the jump shot, you know, for years, if you watch Derrick Rose play, his three-point shot, he would let go of the ball as he was coming down. This was a source of frustration for both Rose and the people that trained him over the years. Now, if you watch it and compare it to the last 10 whatever years, he's shooting while he's on the way up. And that's made a significant difference and made Rose a mid-40% three-point shooter. So I don't think he's going to wind up shooting like Kemba Walker-type volume numbers where he's shooting like 8, 9 three-pointers a game. But if he's shooting 4 or 5, I think he can shoot close to 40% from three. And if he can, that gives that Timberwolf team one of the best 1-2 punches at the point guard position in the league.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to watch. I do want to see Covington and Saric also play more together. I do want to talk about Andrew Wiggins, though. I mean, we talked about max extensions and stuff like that briefly.
Brutal.
Oh, my God, man.
He's the reason that teams should take more advantage of the restricted free agency process, because you don't think that, I mean, look, Wiggins would never have taken the qualifying offer, as some players have done. You don't think the Wolves right now would have been happier letting him hit the free agent market, seeing what that market bore out, and then signing him to or matching whatever offer for Andrew Wiggins on a long-term deal?
They would have been better letting him walk, man.
If somebody gives you a 4-year deal, you match that. I mean, 4 years is not, you know, end all be all, but that fifth year, $31 million per year. I mean, that Wiggins just can't make shots. Like he is not a great perimeter shooter.
Is there anyone they could get for him in a trade? Like who would take him?
I don't think he's toxic like some other players are toxic, but yeah, you're not going to get a high level talent back in return. That's why it's pointless to even think about, you know, making a big deal for him. And he's, you know, I remember, you know, Flip Saunders, when he had Wiggins in that first year, used to put Wiggins on the opponent's best perimeter player because he was desperately trying to unlock what could be a great defensive player in Andrew Wiggins. He has all the tools, Rowan, to be a high-level defensive player. That never happened, though. And you couple that with his perimeter shooting, which has been streaky at best. I don't know what he is. At this point, you'd be hard-pressed to say that he can be a number two on a winning team.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to get too hot takey here, but it's to the point where I don't even want to see him start games anymore right now. Like, I'm just, he's tough to watch. I just want to see Towns like play with Saric and Covington and see how far they can go. And that sounds like a more aesthetically pleasing team to me as well. Like, it's Andrew Wiggins is just a rough watch, man.
Yeah, shooting about 5 3-pointers per game, 35% as we speak from 3-point range. That's just not going to get it done for, you know, a guy playing on the perimeter around a guy like Towns. Because Towns, from what I've seen of him, a handful of games since the Butler deal, yeah, you know, he's drawing more attention because Butler is not out there on the floor and there aren't a lot of reliable 3-point shooters out there on the floor. So he's having to make catches, throw it out, repost, work pretty hard out there because teams don't fear Andrew Wiggins from beyond the 3-point line. I don't think they're going to either at this point in his career.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with him.
Yeah. All right. Well, Rowan, always appreciate it, man. Good stuff this week. We'll let you hammer the Celtics another time. I know you're eager to do that, even though, you know, but they won 3 out of 4,
oh,
something like that.
I mean, okay, here we go. I'm sure you'll write about them glowingly or something.
No, and then I will not. I rarely write about the Celtics. I wrote about them once, I think, and that was when they were downtrodden.
Okay. So you're just helping them build the comeback narrative. I get it. It's a sneaky play on your part.
Oh, yeah, because a team like that's not going to make a run. Yeah, that's just not going to happen.
All right, we'll see. We'll see, man.
All right. Rowan, always appreciate it, man. Thanks for coming in.
Anytime, Chris.
This holiday season, give yourself the gift of extra money in your pocket when you consolidate your credit cards with LightStream. LightStream believes that people with good credit deserve a great interest rate. Get a credit card consolidation loan with rates as low as 6.14 APR% with AutoPay. That's much lower than the national average credit card interest rate of over 19% APR. Plus, your rate is fixed, so as rates continue to rise, your low rate won't budge. Get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000, and you can even get your money as soon as the day you apply. The application is 100% online, and there are no fees. I've used LightStream in the past. It's a terrific way to get money quickly. This holiday season, save even more with an additional interest rate discount. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/Mannix. That's lightstream.com, LightStream.com/Mannix. Subject to credit approval, rate includes a 0.5% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/Mannix for more information.
All right, joining me now on the podcast, Trey Young, the Atlanta Hawks. Trey, thanks for joining me, man.
No problem.
All right, so about a quarter of the way through your rookie season, have you had kind of that welcome to the NBA moment yet? Like that, holy shit, I'm out here on an NBA floor against player X or whatever.
I mean, for me, it's, every night is a different. I mean, story for me. A different welcome to the NBA moment, whether it's going up against Mike Conley or playing AD. Or guarding LeBron and him switching off onto me, or having a chance to hit a game winner in Staples. I don't know. I can't pick out just one so far, but I mean it's been a few.
What was that moment like when LeBron switches onto you for the first time?
I mean it's crazy. It's like going back to whenever we were in high school playing 5-on-5 at camps, things like that. But this is a different stage, different level, different type of competition. So it's like a different feel. It's like a different feel, it seems like.
I would think it's going to be interesting for you having Vince in your locker room too, isn't it?
No, it's great. It's great having Vince in our locker room. His locker is always next to mine. So I'm able to bug him a lot with questions, get on his nerves a little bit. But, I mean, it's great being able to have a guy like him because he's seen it all and done it all. So it's great to have a guy like him to ask questions.
What's something he's been useful with for you in his first 20-something games?
I just think just all the advice he's given me. I really just think it's kind of crazy, the situations, because he was the number 5 pick. He was traded on draft night, with his teammate and someone who was a really good player, Antoine Jameson. So it's kind of crazy how similar our paths have been. Hopefully I'm able to achieve the things he's been able to achieve in his career, but I mean, it's just crazy how the start of his career is very similar to mine.
Are you allowed to make any kind of old jokes around him?
I do a little bit. We all give him a hard time a little bit sometimes about the old jokes, but I mean, he doesn't play like he's old at all.
Pretty cool to watch him get that 25,000 point there, and on a dunk, no less.
I mean, I know. It was tough because I was trying to get him a lot of assists. I mean, I don't know if it was obvious or not how much I was trying to get him those last few points. And it was crazy because it came down to the last second and it was a dunk, so I was happy for him.
There's so many adjustments going from college to the pro, especially a guy that was in college just for 1 year. But, you know, whether it's speed, strength, skill, what would you say is the biggest thing you're adjusting to in the first part of the season?
I think it's just the scouting report every night, someone different, especially at the point guard position, the different styles of play, different coverages. The pace of the game is really the main thing for me, though. It's just like how to control an NBA type of game, how to get my teammates involved and score when I need to. I just think it's the little things that's the biggest difference for me.
The point guard position is savage, man. Like I think it is the most difficult position in any of the four major sports because you have to be the quarterback offensively. And in the 21st century NBA, everybody's got a good point guard. You know, Mike Conley one night. You know, it's the next night's Chris Paul. You know, every Kyrie Irving. You know, if that. I mean, it's got to be just a grind to mentally steel yourself for that.
It really is. It really is. And I mean, if you think about it, I mean, every night is someone different. Where what like you just said, you have guys like Steph shooting from so deep, but able to get around you. Guys like Kyrie Irving, Kemba Walker, with the handle and the savvy in their game. It's just different styles of play, and you also have to be a quarterback on defense. So it's like it's so much, so many things you have to know and be able to coordinate.
Is it possible to, I mean, at the 20-25 game mark of an NBA season, you're basically winding down a college season. Is it possible to prepare yourself for 82 at this point? I mean, what do you do for that?
I think for me, being a rookie, it's hard to prepare. I mean, you don't necessarily know how to, your body's going to handle it, how you're going to react. I think it's just something that most rookies have to go through. And it's something that, I mean, every rookie has to go through and fight through is the long NBA season. And as their career goes on, I think that's just something that you get, I mean, more used to and you can handle and you know how to prepare in the offseason for. So now going into next season, I know how to prepare my body, how to prepare my mind to get ready for 82 games. I mean, it's easy to try to do that coming into the NBA, but you don't necessarily know. And so I think that's a good thing about the position I'm in, is that I know how to handle myself going into the preparation for next year as well.
You feel like you've already learned like what the next off season needs to be?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I've already been thinking about it. I mean, for me, I always think about how can I get better. But right now I'm focused on my team, focusing on, I'm trying to win, but also at the same time, preparing for the future and being with this Atlanta Hawks team. We all want to build something, I mean, big for the future, get it back to winning 60 plus games. And how we need to do that. So for me, it's not only about the now, it's about the future as well.
You talked about the defensive responsibilities of a point guard. How different is that for you, and how big an adjustment has that been?
It's way different. No defensive 3 seconds, so if you're trying to be in help side, you can't necessarily sit in the lane like in college or high school. But also knowing different coverages and what – the other team's personnel, things like that. And being a point guard, you got to know everybody on the court and everybody on the offense and defensive end and their tendencies. So it's definitely a little different.
You made some spectacular three-point shots this season, but the strength of your game has been in the paint. I mean, I think almost 40% of your shots have been within 4 feet of the rim. You're shooting an incredibly high percentage in that range. Does that surprise you at all that you've been that effective? I mean, the floater was a big part of your game in college.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's a big surprise to me at all. I think last year the shooting streak that I went on, the how well I was shooting the ball, really made defenders really want to, I mean, get up and pressure me, and it opened up driver lanes behind my defender. So with the NBA and you can't necessarily be in the lane sitting and waiting for me. I'm able to get by my defender and then try to, I mean, finish at the rim. It's something that I was working a lot on this summer is finishing. And although I haven't been able to knock down shots, obviously, that's going to come. I'm not even worried about it. It's just I got to continue to focus on finishing at the rim.
How have you found the spacing of the NBA game? I mean, Donovan Mitchell told me last year, was like, man, one of the biggest reasons I'm playing so well is that the spacing of the NBA game is so much different than college. It creates so many more opportunities. Have you experienced that?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's the same way. It feels good just knowing that I'm able to score so many points and I haven't even hit a three-pointer in so long. The space of the NBA is way different, and for me in my game, I feel like it's better for me than it was at any other level because of the, like I said, the spacing, how talented, I mean, like my teammates are just playing, I mean, terrific, and so it just opened up the floor.
So you don't worry at all about the three-point shooting at this point? You don't think about it?
I mean, obviously, that's something that I work on. I'm trying to get back into rhythm, whether it's getting more shots up early in the morning, late at night. It's just it's something that's going to come. I've always been a great shooter, and I don't know what it is, but that's something that I know is going to come, and I'm not too worried about it.
Does the change in distance, that affect you at all?
No, I could always shoot with range. I always shoot with range. So, it's not necessarily a difference. That's not the problem.
The constant comparison to Steph Curry, how have you dealt with that?
I don't really focus and think about it. For me, I just try to be the best version of myself. I mean, everybody's going to get compared to somebody. So, hopefully one day I can achieve the things that he's achieved, being an MVP, being a multi-champion. I mean, the things he's been able to accomplish is the things I want to accomplish, but I know I'm not there yet, and I have a long ways to go, but that those are some of the things I want to accomplish.
Was it disappointing not to get to share the floor with them a little while back?
Yeah, it was, I mean, a little disappointing because you want to go up against the best and just to see where you measure out, see where you're at. And so for me, I wanted to go up against him just to see where I was and be able to compete against, I mean, one of the best in our league. So obviously it's a little disappointing, but at the same time, he has to do what's best for him too.
The NBA lifestyle, whether it's, you know, living on your own out here, flying private, what do you like most about it? How have you tried to adjust to it? Do you have people living with you? Do you have people doing things like that?
No, I live by myself, so I don't have anybody with me. I always have family, friends, always around, visiting for long periods of the time, but no one really, I mean, lives with me. But I think it's just, it's so much, I mean, free time. For me, I love to spend my free time at the movies, chilling. Now it's college basketball season back on. There's a lot of college games, so I'm a very laid back person, so I don't really do too much. I have a pool table I'm pretty nice at, so I like doing
it. Do you ever miss those college atmospheres?
I miss them all the time. I watch the Duke games. I watch all the college basketball games. Oklahoma's been playing, and it's just like how crazy the environments were whenever I was there. I really miss that. Sometimes good things pass though too.
What do you think that nowadays the big thing is? A great college football team or basketball team could beat an NBA team or an NFL team.
Yeah.
What do you think of that?
That's disrespectful. I don't think people understand how hard it is to win an NBA. And I don't really care how good a college team is. No team in college can beat a team in the NBA, in my opinion. And I think most people in the league that play in this league every day in and day out would agree with you too. No matter how bad the worst team in the NBA is, they're still pros and they're really good players. And I don't understand how that even gets brought up sometimes.
The last thing I want to ask is, you know, players come into a draft. A lot of them are linked. Chris Paul, Deron Williams, you and Luka, inextricably linked probably for the rest of your career, maybe. How much scoreboard watching, highlight watching, whatever he's doing out in Dallas, do you do?
I mean, I watch basketball, period. I watch a lot of NBA basketball, obviously. I mean, me and Luka are going to be linked for a long time. So I watch him a little bit just because I love watching basketball. I mean, and being able to watch the Mavs, I mean, they're a really good team. There's a lot of really good players. Luka's a good player. I got to know him a lot over this past summer. I mean, he's a good person. We talk quite a bit too. So I mean, I watch NBA basketball. So if they're playing, I'll be watching them. If anybody else is playing, I'll watch too.
Everybody's friends in today's NBA anyway, right? I mean, you guys, maybe not Luka, but you guys, you came in the draft class, which you probably knew for years.
Yeah, yeah. No, we're all close, but at the same time, some of us, I mean, handle on the court differently. I mean, I'm gonna compete with you. I mean, no matter who you are on the court, but off the court, we can be friends. We can be cool.
Trey, good luck the rest of the season, and thanks for joining me here.
Yeah, appreciate it. Appreciate you having me on.
That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Rohan Nadkarni and Trey Young for joining the show. As always, you can download archived episodes on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, really anywhere you can download podcasts. While you're there, post a comment, leave a rating. You know I appreciate it, and I'll see you next week.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.